I'm really sorry about this, Crystal. I'm the one that asked Al to pick a neutral location for our first female guest.
It's a little weird, but it's okay.
Yeah, to give everyone the picture, we're in the last respite to the Western Mail. Al has chosen to serve an all-meat barbecue tailgater in the back of a filthy, jacked-up Dodge Ram pickup truck, parked outside of a butcher shop. We're in Carman, Manitoba. That's subtle, Al. We're not exactly sure what he's trying to compensate for, but I can tell you he is dressed in full camouflage and has been nervously chewing on the same pork rib for the last 10 minutes. Every now and then, he eyes Crystal suspiciously from inside the truck. Now, we have been trying to coax him out using various forms of dried meat, but up until the moment, it has not been working.
Al, get out here. I've told you 12 times that Crystal is very nice and would like to meet you.
No.
Come on, Al. Seriously. She's a very cool person. I mean, she's related to me. You'll like her. You guys actually share a lot of common interests now that I think of it. She loves Jesus, she knows the Bible, she likes to write, and has a blog like you. Well, not exactly like you. I mean, she actually knows how to spell. She loves the church, and she's from Alberta, like you. Her husband is a cowboy and a pastor from a church in Calgary. Oh, and she likes music. She's a great singer. In fact, she got through university on a song and a dance with her fine arts degree. Now that I think of it, you guys are like the yin and yang to each other, which is kind of scary considering I'm related to her.
Yeah, Al, you can come out. I promise I'll be nice.
Okay. I come out now.
Only if she sits on far side of truck and I get more meat. And she have to jam with Steve and me after we do show.
I'd enjoy that, Al.
Okay.
Good boy, Al. Here's the piece of deer jerky I promised you.
It's nice to meet you, Al. I look forward to our discussion.
Meat.
Welcome to Carnivore Theology, a podcast that answers questions about the Christian faith to help you grow from milk to meat, to grow into a wise, skilled, world-changing follower of Jesus Christ, with theologian and pastor Chad Graham, author and pastor Al Desjardins, and your host, Steve Bastian.
Hey, Chad, you've brought Crystal out here today. We're in this truck. You're sitting next to Crystal. Can you introduce her to us officially?
Crystal is my sister and grew up with me, and she suffered immensely for it. But I think it has also made her strong and prepared to survive in a hard world.
Suffering produces character.
Suffering produces character. The last time that Crystal and I were in the same home together was in our days in British Columbia and Prince George, and I went away to college, and Crystal went away with my family to Calgary, actually to Okotoks. And I'm told that when they came into town, there was a couple of cowboys riding horses along the side of the road. And Crystal noticed them, and she looked at my parents and said, "What kind of a place did you bring me to?" It would be just a few short years after that that she would marry the cowboy of her dreams and move to a ranch.
That's true.
And so that is simply a lesson to see if you have any family members or friends that you find are getting tied into the liberal left coast or out east, send them to Alberta. A couple of weeks, we'll hook them up with a cowboy, and all will be well.
So this is your redemption story.
Yes.
Okay.
Crystal's very smart. She did go to the University of Calgary, where she did receive a fine arts degree and do very fine at it. She's a wonderful dancer and singer. And she blogs some very tremendous and helpful blogs that my wife and I have read, and that a lot of our friends have read and said many nice things about, which it pains me to do, but I should. She's been recently featured on the True Women blog, Focus on the Family, the Center for Biblical Manhood and Womanhood, and what's the name of your blog?
Foretasteofheaven.
Foretasteofheaven.blogspot.com. Foretasteofheaven.blogspot.com. I only read them through the Facebook link. It's like, I made a new post, so I click on it. So I don't actually know what I go to for the URL. Anyway, they're great. I recommend them to my church. I recommend them to our listeners. And so this is Crystal. You'll notice, however, though, disappointingly, she did not go along with the program like our last guest and wear a beard. And with that, I think we probably do need to run her through the meat grinder to see if she's worthy.
I'm a little concerned about the meat grinder, though, because it's kind of calibrated for bearded men, and I don't know exactly what's going to happen to the computer when we hit the go button. It's going to be really interesting to see how it calibrates for her. It's going to be interesting.
The meat grinder.
The meat grinder.
The meat grinder.
Yeah, I'm nervous.
Yeah, by the way, she doesn't know anything about this meat grinder. We're kind of dropping it on her. She said today, wait, what is this meat grinder?
Really? You gave her no prep whatsoever?
No!
Worst brother ever. Oh, okay, all right.
That's perfect. Welcome to the meat grinder. This is the Biblical Knowledge and Personal Integrity Examination to see if you're worthy to speak in authority to the Carnivore Theology audience. You'll be asked a series of questions of your personal beliefs. Things that Carnivore Theology finds important and a dissection of your theology. The rules are, you must answer honestly and quickly. Indecisiveness will be seen as weakness. And you will be judged.
This is terrifying. So, do you do this to all of your guests?
Yeah. Every single one.
No, okay. Be nervous. It's hard. It's scary. Shh. Quiet.
Can we edit answers out after?
No. But if you get it wrong, we'll turn off the podcast.
Okay. Fair enough.
It's meant to be fun.
Okay, I'm ready. I think.
Okay, number one, Luther, Calvin, or L. Ron Hubbard?
Calvin.
Your preference, beard or no beard?
My husband has no beard, so I'm going to say no beard. Sorry, guys.
Clint has ruined the podcast.
Oh, man.
Is it because Clint can't grow one?
Let's just leave it at that. Next question.
No. I would say more, but I feel like I would just get myself into trouble.
We love you, Clint.
No, he looks good with a beard, too.
Okay.
I might change that preference if he starts to grow a beard.
I was going
to
say, you mean better. You don't mean good. You mean better. I know exactly what you mean.
Message to Clint. Grow a beard, man.
Carnivore Theology, bringing out the truth about women's issues.
Okay. Number three. Communion, wine, or Welch's grape juice?
Oh, you guys. Grape juice.
Number four, will there be bacon in heaven?
Well, there is feasting, isn't there? So why not?
Nice. Okay, number five, pick one book other than the Bible if you could only pick one.
I've been informed that my favorite book is The Art of the Christian Ninja by Alan Dejeuneau.
Number six, what is your favorite type of art? Music, dance, painting, hand puppets?
Music, okay. I would say, not hand puppets.
Okay, number seven, cowboy boots, ropers, or Birkenstocks?
Cowboy boots, absolutely.
Number eight, in communion, leaven, unleavened, or gluten-free?
Gluten-free, I would say. So now you're all making stereotypes, I know. Yeah. There's a lot of celiacs in our church.
Right. Okay. Number nine, we need the dirt. What is the most embarrassing thing that Chad has ever done to you?
You never said this question was in there. This is unjust.
This is why you don't read the notes. Okay, this is important. We can do things like this.
The most embarrassing thing Chad has done to me.
That we can put on the podcast without being banned.
Yeah, think top 10 without having to put the explicit on the podcast.
I think that might be still to come in this episode. I have a feeling.
Okay, here's a real question. It comes from an old cowboy song. Number 10. If three men dressed up as cowboys got into a single cab truck and only one of them is a real cowboy, how would he tell which one is the real cowboy?
Are they all dressed up like a cowboy, you said?
They all look like cowboys, but only one of them is the real cowboy. Where would he sit?
Oh, where would he sit? Oh, in the driver's seat. I was going to say he has manure on his boots, but...
Ooh.
Cow manure.
Okay.
Should specify. Or horse, you know.
Actually, they sit in the middle. They don't have to get out to open the fences, and they don't have to drive.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, Al.
All right, we're going to run it through the computer. Okay, well, I don't know how what's going to happen here.
All right, let's go through the computer and see what it says.
Yeah.
I think we have to keep going anyway. The computer exploded.
Oh.
I don't know what happened there, but we're going to assume that she made it past and she was unwilling to embarrass her brother publicly, and she converted to beers live on the podcast. So
yes,
that's
very true. And the pressure is now on Clint, because all of our thousands of listeners are going to be emailing him, phoning him. Remember, go to his website, calvarygrace.ca, and send a message into the pastor saying you ought to have a beard.
In fact, if you could get his picture off of the website and then add a beard to it and then email it to him, he'll be able to be inspired to see what he would look like.
Well, that's a good point.
Feel free to use mine.
It is. That's a very nice beard, yeah.
Moderately good beard. Yeah. All joking aside, you know, we really want to ask you about some of the important issues that kind of be in our culture around women's issues. And I know Al has a big question. He's rocking back and forth right now. He's actually looking like he's warming up to you, and I know he's tugging my sleeve, wanting to ask you a question.
Okay, Crystal, I want to get this out of the way up front, and so I appreciate you being here. I think this is a good thing. Our topic today is women in the church, and at the risk of sounding like a crazy person, there's something that I've been wanting to ask for a while.
Wait, Al, you were supposed to say, this is something that a friend of a friend would like to know about.
No, I'm no coward. Okay? I'm no coward. Okay, but I've never found the right person, I've never found the right time, and this seems to be exactly it. I think the stars have finally aligned to allow me to ask this question. Are you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay.
I think.
As a male pastor, I've been told repeatedly that all it takes for my ministry to be completely kaput is one accusation of impropriety. Even the allusion to some sort of scandal. Even if I've done nothing, all it takes is one accusation and I'm totally hosed. Therefore, I've read in innumerable books and articles that I need to make sure that I'm never alone with a woman, never counsel a woman long term, never become emotionally involved with a woman, never become good friends with a woman, never share my heart issues with a woman, and never, ever, ever comment on any part of any female's physical appearance ever. Can't even say nice earrings, cool shirt, like your haircut, nothing, because they'll immediately be objectified and offended. So my question, therefore, is should male church leaders or Christian men in general live in fear of the women in their church? Because I think that's what's happening today. Should we be constantly worried about talking to them, sitting with them, sharing with them, becoming anything more than just passing acquaintances with them for fear someone might think something or say something and we'll end up wrecking the church and destroying ministries all around us? It's almost as though men need to assume that women are out to get us just to keep us safe. But I have a heart. In my heart, I want to care for all the people in my church, and I know that before a woman will open up about their struggles, accept any kind of pastoral care, they have to feel loved and cared for and befriended and needed and safe around their pastor, safe around their small group leader, or whatever. And I think there's a lot of confused men out there, me being the chief most, pastor, elders, deacons, ministry leaders, who want to be good Christian brothers and sisters, but how the heck are you supposed to do that?
Okay, yeah, so there's a lot of parts to that question.
You say it's a two-part question. Yes, Al should be afraid of women specifically, all other men.
Did Chad just give you the answer to your question? Well, okay.
It's not an easy question. Some of those dynamics between men and women are difficult to figure out. First, I don't think you need to feel pressure to be best friends with the women in your church, so take that burden off your shoulders. You shouldn't be emotionally available to them in the same way that a husband would be to his wife. If you do that, it would just cause misunderstanding and confusion. But I do think pastors should know who the women in their church are. So you should, you know, chat with them on a Sunday morning and generally have a friendly and approachable demeanor so women aren't intimidated by you. Jesus and the apostles used familial terms to describe the relationships between men and women in the church. So I think if you think of the women in your church as your sister or your mother or your grandmother, you know, you're on pretty safe ground there. With married women, which is probably the majority of women in your church, inclusivity is key. So be friends with both the husband and wife. And I think it's wise to be cautious of exclusive interactions with the wife, like email, Facebook messages, phone conversations. And that way there's no misunderstandings. I think it's also wise to be cautious in counseling situations, like you said. My husband's a pastor too, and I think just for a number of reasons, it's wise when a woman's feeling weak and vulnerable to take precautions. Maybe just having another woman in the room while you're counseling is all it takes. But in scripture, there are examples of men and women working alongside together in ministry. It's not like men and women have completely separate lives in the church. There's an intermingling of life and ministry. For example, Paul speaks of two women, in Philippians 4 as those who have labored side by side with him in the gospel. In Luke 8, it says that a group of women traveled with Jesus and his 12 disciples to different towns and villages, and they provided for them out of their own means. So in the Bible, there's examples of men and women working together in ministry. So it is possible and presumably a good thing, but it's not always easy to figure out those dynamics.
No, it's super not easy to figure out. I mean, I really appreciate the deaconesses in our church, and I appreciate the women because they do most of the work in the church, to be honest. And it's hard to get the men to be involved in the church. It's one thing to be involved in like their things outside the church, but it's hard to get them involved. And I feel this draw to want to minister to everybody, including the women. It's just it's this subculture that makes it's scary. So I guess can you answer this question? In the past, as you've grown up in the church and you've grown up as a Christian woman within the church, how have you felt the interaction and the ministry of male elders or male Christians in the church to you specifically? Has that been something that's been like, that's weird, I usually hang out with the women, or this has not been a great thing? Or have you had really good men who have figured this stuff out?
I would say I've had pretty good pastors. I've never been like super close and having heart to heart with my pastors, which
not even now,
which I think, well, yeah, except for right now, my pastor is my husband, so we do have a little heart. But even before Clint was my pastor, but I think there's sort of an affection, like a daughterly or, you know, sisterly, depending on the age difference, where, you know, there's a warmth and you engage with each other, and, you know, it's not like you're scared. I think sometimes when men are overly afraid of objectifying women, they make the women feel objectified because, you know, as a woman, if a man can't like come and talk to me and make eye contact and engage in small talk, then I don't feel like he's able to engage with me as a person. He's just struggling and seeing me as an object, if that
makes
sense.
Because that's me all over the place. I'm super concerned all the time because I think I've read way too many articles and seen too many guys flame out and too many pastors explode. And, you know, it's like, I don't want to do that. And I really want to respect the women and I want them to be comfortable around me and I don't want to be like creepy. And so therefore I don't want to say anything, but at the same time, I want to be come across as loving and caring, but at the same time, I can't be too loving and caring. And so I'm just, I find it incredibly difficult to be able to run that balance of trying to have a conversation in the church that leads to something meaningful, that allows the relationship to be built and that person to know that I'm available for them for prayer, for caring, and that I actually care about what's going on in their heart. Because I think I've just seen way too much stuff in the media and around that says, you know, warning, warning, warning.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think you have to feel like you have to have this big heart to heart with each woman in the church every time you talk to them. Like, if you are able to engage in small talk, remember something about their life to ask them about, like the little things. That'll make them feel cared for and seen and heard in your church, I think.
Well, let me ask you this question then. Generally across the board, do women really see conservative churches and their pastors as generally chauvinistic and oppressing of women? Is there a culture out there of women that you know that when they look at the church, you know, I'm from a small Baptist church, do they see it as basically chauvinistic and oppressing of women? Or is there, do women see the church, or is that just basically like weird news stuff and then people are blowing this up way out of proportion?
Yeah, I can't speak for all women and all conservative
churches. Wait, what do you mean?
No, you have
what?
To.
Why not? What? I thought you were part
That's
of the special club.
You, here.
You have one job.
Just speak
Maybe you can make a few phone calls and get back to us.
Yeah, but I can speak to my own experience. So I belong to a complementarian church, and by that I mean that only qualified men are elders and pastors in the church. And we get this idea from passages such as Titus 1:5-9 that lists elder qualifications, and a man is clearly in view. It's a man above reproach and the husband of one wife. Also, 1 Timothy 2:12, Paul says, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. And this is in the context of the church gathering, so it's clear that women are not to be taken on the role of an elder. Also in marriage, the husband and wife have different roles to play. The husband is given the responsibility of headship, and the wife is to follow his lead. So Ephesians 5 is an example of that. So for myself, in a complementarian setting, I have not felt oppressed at all. I would say that I've even flourished in this setting. I think that God knew what he was doing when he made these guidelines and distinctions, and it's a lie to say that God has something less for women just because they're not elders. So there are differences between men and women, but this doesn't undercut the equality of men and women. And by that, I mean that men and women are both created in the image of God and that we are equal in value and worth. Galatians 3:28 says we're spiritual equals. You know, there's neither male nor female, but all are one in Christ Jesus. Women are co-heirs with Christ right alongside the men. And this tone of equality is felt in my church. So no one treats me like a man. I'm not interchangeable with the men in my church, but I am treated as an equal with the men in my church.
That sounds good. That sounds like a good thing.
Yeah.
Have you met any of the women that kind of don't believe what you believe? That you're basically a sellout to the feminist cause?
Of course. And there are situations where there are abusive dynamics going on. So, I mean, I think there are both extremes. And so we need to be careful when we speak of complementarianism that we define, I think, what it is and also what it's not. So it's not man-centered where everything's about the men and the women are all subservient to them, right? Mm. So making that distinction. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of women that would disagree with me on that. Some because they are in abusive situations and others just because they don't like what God's word says is God's design for men and women.
So, well, are you feeling somewhat more comforted now?
I am a little bit, yeah. I'm starting to calm down. I've been breathing into a bag a little bit over here, but it's all right. I appreciate you being gentle with me and answering my questions. And I've met a lot of wonderful women in the church, and they've all been super nice. And it really seems to be all these women that these articles are based on. Most of the women I've ever met are super great, like you. You're super great. So this is it's good.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Al, can you let go of my hand now?
Al, how about this? Let's just say you've come to the confessional now and given your questions. We'll say, we absolve you. Go and say 10 Hail Marys to a woman, and then go and make friends with a young lady.
If her name is Mary, won't that come across weird?
All right, let's take this in a little different direction. For those of you in our listening family that perhaps... have followed some of the work that Crystal's done in her blogging and so on. You have to realize as well that she has a busy situation. She is the wife of a pastor of a growing church. And those of us who are in ministry know what that can do with family stresses. She's also a mother of three little boys, all of whom try to climb on her head at once, right? And between all of these different things, blogging and being a wife and being a mother and being a church member and in some ways being a church leader, formally and informally. How do you balance biblically, sort out your priorities and this kind of thing?
First off, give your kids a shout out. We need some names here.
Oh, hi, Hunter, Knox. Well, Hunter and Knox are at school.
Let's do that again, and we'll put some exciting music in the background for them.
Hi, Hunter, Knox, and Winston. Mommy loves you.
Hi, Hunter. Hi, Knox. Hi, Winston.
Hi.
Hey, boys.
They're going to love that.
now you can answer the question.
All right.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to lie. My house looks like a bomb right now.
And I should say, just to add a little bit of excitement to that, is some of you are aware of the High River flooding that happened 2 years ago. Unfortunately, Crystal and her family were one of the families hit by that. Their house was pretty much wiped out. And I believe it was 18 months until you were able to get back into it again.
Yeah,
give or take
a year and a half. Yeah.
And then the fun news is that 2 weeks ago, they had a birthday party for the middle boy. And when they came home from the party, the main line coming into the house had burst and the basement was flooded again. So they're actually right in the midst of that all over again. So you're a busy person. You've had a busy life. But all through this, you've kept blogging and mothering and churching and...
I thought you were going to say, and after the party at their house, it actually looked worse.
No, I wasn't at the party. It was the kids.
So seven-year-olds know how to party, I tell you. No, we just took Titus, his little boy.
I've often thought I was a busy guy, but then I've listened to Crystal's life, so
yeah. Yeah. No, well, first and foremost, I'm a child of God, so I do prioritize my relationship with him first, and I make sure I have time for communion with him, and I pay attention to my own spiritual health. After this, I see the Bible encouraging women to have their family be a priority. And the idea of a woman as a life giver and a nurturer is not new. I see back in Genesis, both Adam and Eve were to subdue the earth and have dominion over every living thing, but they carried out this mandate in uniquely male and female ways. So Adam was placed in the garden to work and keep it, and he was later cursed in the same realm of work. And by contrast, Eve was perfectly equipped to give and nurture life, and then she was cursed in the realm of childbearing and marriage. So Adam and Eve had different roles, but they complemented each other perfectly. Now, I should just specify, I don't think this means that women can't work outside the home, but rather a woman is uniquely fitted to help her husband and give and nurture life. So just being aware of this difference. And this will look different if you're single, obviously, too, but you're still uniquely fitted to be a nurturer, so you can be a spiritual mother to younger women and disciple them in the faith. You can show hospitality and care for the people in your life. So there isn't a one-size-fits-all way for women to fulfill this role, but I do make my home a priority. I see in the New Testament that women are also encouraged to be home-centric. For example, Titus 2, older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands and children and to manage their homes. So creating a healthy home atmosphere is important for me. After my family comes all other ministry and outside commitments. So if I feel like my family life is starting to fall apart, I pull back on outside commitments. But more often than not, there's margin in my life to pursue some other things, mostly because I have a wonderful husband and he's very involved with the kids, and he helps out around the house.
So when do you do your blog then? Like when you, because I know a lot of women that they get the home right, they get the church right, they even do their devos and stuff. But when it comes to actually serving in the church or pursuing their own interests and stuff, they get a little confused. They're like, well, I don't know if I can just take time away for me, because they're very service oriented to their friends, to their family, and you know, and taking time for them to actually sit down and write or to sit down and do their thing is that they feel guilty. So how do you do that and then not feel guilty?
Yeah, well, it's not easy to figure out, and I think it's really different in each situation because it depends on your husband as well, how busy he is or how much he's able to be involved in your home life. I think that's a big factor, as well, the stage that your kids are in. Like, you know, when I was in the baby preschool or toddler stage, there's no way. Like, I couldn't find the time. I was so exhausted, I couldn't even make a sentence, you know. But my kids are getting a little bit older. Two of them are in school. So I do find I'm able to carve out some time. And, I mean, it's not easy to figure out, but I think there's margin. As long as there's health in your home and the essential things are getting done, then you can carve out time to do some of these things.
Cool.
I have a question a little more directed at in the church. What would a good and godly, helpful women's ministry look like? And to contrast that, what would a bad women's ministry look like in a church?
Yeah, I don't feel like an expert on this one, but...
Well, can we rephrase the question to be something like, for you, what would a good, helpful, godly ministry look like that would actually help you? And what would a bad one that you've seen before, what has a bad one been like? You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah. I think a bad women's ministry looks like a bunch of affinity groups where women in the same stage of life get together to talk about similar interests. So maybe like a fitness group or a young moms group or a cap crafting group.
Ooh, I'll be part of that club. That sounds like fun.
Well, and these aren't bad things in and of themselves, but I think we should call it socializing and not women's ministry. By contrast, I think a healthy women's ministry includes women of all ages with different interests, all different stages of life. And we're united by a common love for Jesus Christ. So I think there should be a culture of discipleship where older women are teaching younger women about biblical womanhood and where women study God's word together, bear each other's burdens, pray for each other, encourage one another in the Lord. So I think this can take a lot of different shapes depending on your church situation. But if the basic fundamentals are there, I think that's what's important.
Do you have a woman in your life right now that's mentoring you, or are you mentoring someone yourself?
Yeah, I would say multiple people for both of those. Yeah, I have multiple women that the elders, there's in our church, their wives, and I get together to pray once a month. And that's been really beneficial for me because several of those women have just a lot of wisdom and have really helped me through a lot of things. And then I feel there are a number of women in my life that I've had an opportunity to pour into a little bit as well.
And so that's not one. That's more unofficial or official? Because obviously the prayer meeting once a month is official, but the mentoring, it sounds more unofficial.
It's more unofficial. I'm teaching a women's Bible study. We're going through Colossians right now. So there's some of that teaching aspect, but I think there's also just through relationships, counseling through their individual problems. So unofficial, yeah.
Is that your area of gifting, or do you find that to be a responsibility because you're the pastor's wife?
No, I don't feel that I'm on staff or have a special status as pastor's wife. I feel like I'm just trying to be a healthy church member.
That's cool.
Which is a good attitude, because that is a lot of pressure that the church is.
In
your answer to that last one, for those who are listening, one of the most significant movements in the church in the last 20 years has been the homogeneous principle idea. And that is that people who are like one another will naturally tend to be with those who are like one another. So if a church is to be successful, its programs, maybe the entire church, we're told, actually ought to target specific affinity groups. So we'll have churches that are only for millennials, or churches that are only for seniors, or churches that are only for white suburbanites, or churches, and then within the church, especially the larger, more successful ministries, you got to have all those clubs in the church in order for it to even be relevant. And what you're presenting there is an entirely different picture. So from what you said, and from what I understand what you're saying in your earlier presentation, we share a role that God gave us men and women right from the garden. And there's kind of a distinctive masculine perspective and a distinctive feminine perspective, but it's one mission. And it's a shared thing, and our churches need to reflect the unity of the human race and our mission as children of God in that as well. So just in thinking through, it's just a follow-up on that same idea. Do you think there's, because there is those distinctive perspectives still, do you think that there is a need for a distinctive women's ministry, or is that even in itself already gone too far? Or is that one of those helpful things that can help us to be better together?
Well, I don't think technically you could get by without one. I mean, you get preaching and teaching from the pulpit and help that way. I think it is helpful to have one because, you know, there's that Titus 2 idea of older women teaching the younger women, and they can hear it from the pulpit, but it's a whole lot easier to hear from an older woman who does it to submit to your husband, say, than, you know, so there's some, and they can speak into your life maybe a little bit more. So I think it is helpful to have women teach.
And that's a good distinction too, because the Bible never tells us to have suburban white fellowships, but it specifically tells us in Titus 2, for example, to have a women's ministry, whether informal or not.
There's two very big differences between the consumer-minded, you know, model of saying, okay, we have to target this group because then we will, you know, scratch their itch and then they'll come in and they'll give us time, energy, and money, versus, you know, the way that discipleship works generally among humans is this. And I think Scripture addresses that rather than the goofy consumer-minded model that we've come up with in the church. I do have a question, though. I was reading online, and it turns out feminism is still a thing. I've been hoping for it to kind of blow over, but it seems to be hanging in there. So what is the best way for a male preacher to address feminism from the pulpit so that women will actually listen and not assume that he's trying to tell them to be barefoot and in the kitchen? So, and alternatively, not just as a pastor or a preacher, but how can a man actually talk about feminism and the issues of feminism in a way that it doesn't sound like they're saying, "Now you, woman, get barefoot and in the kitchen immediately." Is there a middle ground, you know, or is that door totally a mess?
Yeah, no, I think pastors just need to preach the scriptures faithfully.
There you go, Al. Wham!
Simple, really.
No. Drop the mic right there. Boom!
No, but you know, you can't go too far in the scriptures without coming to a passage that discusses gender differences. So, you know, I think if you're faithfully preaching through the scriptures, then feminism will be addressed by the scriptures themselves. I think it is helpful if pastors are aware that most women in your church will hear inequality when you say role differences. Feminism teaches that men and women are the same and essentially interchangeable. And in our culture, a person in leadership, the boss, is qualitatively better than those under them. They're more important and valuable to the company, and it's a hierarchy.
Like Steve is to Chad.
Like what?
Like Steve is to Chad.
Like, yeah.
More important than me.
No comment. Yeah. Okay.
It's the beard. If you look at the beards,
the beard,
you can see that,
maybe makes
that Steve has
up
the most
ladder,
glorious beard. Yeah. L has sort of a medium beard, and you know, mine's a little.
You guys have a whole hierarchy.
So we have a hierarchy.
I don't know if that's biblical.
That's got to be biblical.
What?
We call Steve the Steve is the most right reverend archbishop. I'm just a humble elder.
Yeah. So anyway, in the world, the higher up the ladder you go, the more important you are. But the church, it's a different story. And my husband said from the pulpit on a number of occasions, the church is a complementarity of roles, not a hierarchy of status. So the elders in the congregation have different roles to play. The elders, their role is to lead the people, and part of the congregation's role is to follow, but no one's higher up the ladder. All are equal valued members of the church community, and we all have an important role to play. So I think it's important for pastors to preach role distinctions, but also equality, because there's that worldly idea out there that people will instantly think you mean when that's not what you mean. Also, I know you asked about preaching, but I think a pastor's words and actions outside the pulpit also speak loudly. You know, are they dismissive or condescending toward women, or do women feel supported and valued in their church? Do women feel like they have a voice? Are there opportunities for women to lead where appropriate and to grow in the Lord? And so this all makes it easier for women to hear and accept what you're saying from the pulpit.
Appreciate that. Thanks.
Yeah. All right. Now, as you know, Crystal is a woman, and so obviously could only possibly speak to women's issues. In fact, the only reason anyone would talk to her would be for that.
Yeah, she said the word Bible, and I just tuned right out.
But since we actually don't believe that, and Crystal has showed us some good insight into thinking, you know, through Scripture and thinking through the way we ought to live, there's a lot of wisdom that we can all take home for this. But one perspective that she can bring that goes back to that perspective issue, we're looking for the same kinds of things, but from a more feminine perspective, would just be to think about what kind of messages young women in our church, in your opinion, from your experience, what do they most need to hear today from the church?
Mm-hmm. I think women in the church today need to understand what it means to have their identity in Christ. When you become a Christian, it's not just about getting into heaven. Christ transforms your life, and you have a new self. You're a new creation. So we don't have to prove our worth, if that makes sense. Women long for something, I think, to distinguish them or to give them a sense that they're worth something. You know, we all have different standards by which we measure our worth. And for some, it's the success of your career or how well your children turned out, or maybe it's how you look or how skinny you are or how many Facebook friends you have, or, you know, whether you have a man in your life. So the list could go on and on. But God has something better for women than these artificial standards. And Jesus gives us a new identity and a new status before God. So we're no longer enemies and separated from God by our sin, because Jesus paid the penalty for our sins and declared us righteous. And Christians are also adopted into God's family and beloved children. So we have this privilege of being co-heirs with Christ. And I don't think we can even begin to comprehend these spiritual riches that we enjoy in Christ. But I want women in the church to know that this is who they are. They are a new creation. So people's opinions don't define them, and their earthly success is not who they are, and their marriage status is not their life, but instead Colossians 3:4 says, if you're a believer, Christ is your life. So this is your new identity. Our purpose isn't to make something of ourselves in front of the world, but rather to give God glory with our life and to serve him. So I think it's important for the women to understand how the cross intercepts with their day-to-day lives.
Hey, our time's quickly coming to an end here, because I'm basically running out of meat. I've eaten most of it around here, so I'm just going to leave when it's gone. So before I go, though, I do have a question, and this is something that's kind of been bugging me for a long time. We've already talked about how a lot of men have checked out, especially under the age of, like, 40. And my ideas is because the church has been so feminized. You know, everything has a doily. The pictures on the wall are soft. There's no... All the corners have been sanded
the
down.
Flowers,
you know what I mean? Like,
poinsettias.
Just, there's like a feminization of preaching.
I don't bring feminism to the pulpit. What do
not
you say?
Not feminism. Feminization. Feminization.
Well, feminization.
Okay.
Oh, I am feminized in the pulpit, yeah.
Just because you wear a kilt. That's not the same. I have a question. Okay.
Okay.
Here's my question. How do we find balance in the church so that we can speak to the women and we can speak to the men? Because it seems like there's this division, and I brought this up the whole episode. There's this division between men and women. Can we have a church, and in your mind, how would we work this, that not only speaks to women, as you've just addressed, which was absolutely a great answer, but also speaks to men without having to, as Chad said, divide them up when they get to the door? Okay, men, you go this way, women, you go this way, and now you guys shouldn't talk to each other because clearly you have nothing in common. How can we bring back our men without turning into this, you know, Harley Davidson, you know, all barbecue male church, but actually keep it a unity of spirit among men and women?
In
other words, how to do it without becoming a popular Seattle model?
I know exactly. How do you not go full Mark Driscoll craziness or cowboy church with Harleys and all the rest of that stuff? And I've seen Harley Church and all the rest of that weirdness. So that seems to be this reaction to the feminization of the church. Can we find a middle ground? Is there a way to do that? Have you thought about that at all?
Yeah. I think first we should just say that, you know, if there are a lot of women in the church and they're growing in godliness and coming to Christ, that's something to be celebrated. You know, maybe that seems obvious, but but it's not a bad thing. Women can influence.
That's why we need this feminine perspective from time to time. There's too many women here. We need to do something about this.
Once every 70 episodes, we'll let a girl on, and then that's it.
But you know what? I do find that that we've had visitors come to the church, and young men in particular, single young men, appreciate it when there are lots of women in the church.
Hmm.
Yeah, that may be for different reasons.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. I don't think that's a biblical reason. But, I mean, women can influence men to a certain degree if the women or if the churches are full of women. 1 Peter 3:1-5, the Apostle Peter encourages women to live holy lives and to win their husbands over to Christ through their godly character. So there is some of that. I think women can also encourage men, generally speaking, by affirming them and giving appreciation when they do step up and take responsibility and take leadership where appropriate.
As opposed to taking it from them, right? Where, oh, you don't do that right, I'm just going to do it myself. Or you can't be a deacon because you're not here long enough or something, right? Like, how do you, I really like what you're saying, and this is getting men involved and encouraging them and stuff. And because we have such a female-dominated church, how do we get them in, right? So I really appreciate that. Keep going.
Yeah,
say more good things.
Say more good things.
I mean, I think we have to be careful not to blame women either in how we talk about it, because it's not the women's fault if the men have, you know, are in sin and apathy, right? Like, it
good
is the
call.
Men's
yes.
responsibility, not to be a feminist, but it is the men's responsibility before God to step up and be the spiritual leader in their home and also where appropriate in the church. So there are ways women can influence men and you know, try to win their husbands over to Christ and encourage men when they do step up and be a man in the way that God has called them to be a man.
But theologically, that's a really good point, because I was thinking about like marriage counseling and things when we talk to people. Very often, it doesn't matter which one, but one spouse is trying to live out their biblical responsibilities and to follow the Lord, and one spouse isn't. Mm-hmm. And they'll often say, but I don't know, let's say it's the man. Well, if she won't be submissive, how can I be a leader? Mm-hmm. Or the woman will say, well, if he won't lead, I've got to run the show. And the whole thing is that we're not actually told to be responsible for the other person's role. We're responsible for ourselves.
Right.
And there are ways to be, because biblical male leadership isn't military dictatorship, right? It's that servant leadership and that giving of love and leading by example and love. There's never not single verse in the Bible that says, men, submit your wives to yourselves. Right?
Right, make your wife submit. Right. Yeah, the Bible doesn't say that. Yeah.
Although, unfortunately, some people in the church have said things like that. But that's not there.
There are other holy books that have that written in it, though.
That's true. But you can be a biblical man even if your wife isn't fulfilling her role. And I think right. that probably extends exactly to the church, like you're saying. If we've got lots of women in the church, we should celebrate that. Mm-hmm. We can have a beautiful biblical femininity in the church and a full flourishing of female roles and wonderful things happening. And that doesn't diminish anything. Mm-hmm. We would also like to have men involved, mm-hmm. but it's not really in competition.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't see it as a competition. I think it's important for the elders and pastors to model biblical manhood so that the young men and the, you know, the young boys growing up in the church can see models and see that it is actually a good thing. And I think pastors need to be preaching about what it is. And then I think women just need to live faithfully and be godly and, you know, we trust the rest to the Lord.
That's good. Hey, you know what? I did it. I finally finished the meat, so I'm leaving. thank you. I really appreciate the talk. I'm starting to feel kind of a wave of love towards you. And it's
sisterly love, right?
You're finding it disturbing.
I'm getting a little delirious from possibly all the MSG in the barbecue sauce or something. I don't know. I've never felt this emotion.
You're having a meat sweat.
This is a strange feeling of coming over me. So I'm gonna have to leave now.
Crystal, what is your website address again? Your Foretaste of Heaven.
Yeah, foretasteofheaven.blogspot.ca. Actually, I think I said com.
Ca.
Yeah.
All right, now get out of my truck. I'm out of here.
Okay, catch you later, Alt.
Bye.
Crystal, let's back up. Alt has a tendency to be a little overzealous when he drives.
Later, suckers!
Hey! That's gonna leave a mark.
To find out more about carnivore theology, or if you've got any topics or questions you'd like us to cover on upcoming episodes, let us know by visiting our website, www.carnivoretheology.com. You can also leave a message on our SpeakPipe page. That's at www.speakpipe.com/carnivoretheology. If you like what we're doing, please share with your church and friends. Like us on Facebook, rate and subscribe to us on iTunes, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. We encourage you to connect with your local biblical church and keep your eyes on the cross.
One, two, three.
Clap like me.
Crystal didn't clap.
Yeah, she ruined the whole thing.
I didn't know that was a thing.
She has no idea what we're doing. It's magic. It's all magic.
What do you mean, don't worry about it? That's our number one tradition.
Put the guests clapping? We've never had the guests clapping.
I always have the guests clap. Otherwise, there's no point.
What is the sound of one hand clapping?
This is what you can do.
There you go. That's the sound Steve of one can hand clap clapping.
One hand, yes.
One hand clapping.
If Steve claps on the island and we've turned off the recording, does it make a noise?
If Steve's hand is clapping in the forest and nobody hears, has he really clapped?
Yeah, it's a little weird. Do I have to say I like it?
No.
Why not?
All right, how about this?
This isn't really sounding my idea of fun.
We're two sentences in and my heart already hurts.
What about if I say, but it's okay?
Yeah.
Okay, that works. Okay. We're okay with a little bit of ad-libbing.
And then I'm going to ad-lib just a little bit.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Only because you don't know how to follow directions.
Exactly. Yeah, Elle, she's a cool person. You'll like her. She loves Jesus, knows the Bible, likes to write, and has a blog like you.
We have Stephen Hawking. Better than your Attenborough impersonation.
But not as good as Sean Connery.
She loves the church, and she's from Alberta, like you. You're supposed to say, okay, I come out. Have you not read the notes?
Who wrote this skit? This is going to be the only nice thing she's going to say to me all episode. I want to hear two things.
Oh, say it again.
Say my line again.
I won't bite much, you know, something.
Anything else, yeah.
Yeah, Al, you can come out. I promise I'll be nice.
Okay, I come out now. That'll make sense in post-production, I promise.
Yes, I'm sure.
That sounds like something else, just so you know.
Sorry. They're very similar sounds.
Yeah, that's I may why
put
I'm laughing.
I can get a flush.
Okay. Today, we talk with Crystal Humphrey, who knows more about women issues in the church than the guys combined. Honestly.
We don't want to build her up too much, but she is the single most foremost expert on the planet in women's issues. Ready?
That was a bit of a setup. You've only known me since the day I was born.
Yeah, well, yeah, so it's, I mean, you know, a few years.
34 years.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say
did
that.
Did I just say my age?
Yeah, no, I was keeping that under wraps.
So now it's permanently recorded. Okay, number five. Pick one book other than the Bible if you could only pick one.
I don't know.
Who's that by?
By Indecisiveness.
I think you can find it on Amazon.com. Kindle edition is forthcoming.
It's too much pressure when there's one book.
Quick, pick this one. It's good.
Yeah, what's this one? I don't know who this guy is, so I'm not going to say that one.
Crystal loves Karl Barth's latest.
Okay. No books?
Think about it. I'm a slow thinker.
Crystal doesn't read.
I do like books, but...
Thank you so much for your time, Crystal. I hope that Al didn't scare you off too much. It looks like you made a new friend there. He's actually not grunting and at you anymore, so that's a huge improvement.
I'm happy to be Al's friend.
This is me being a friend. Yeah!
With friends like these.
You know, this is good because now I've had both my brother and my sister on, but the problem is that both of them have looked smarter than me. So, you know, this is sort of leaving me in a funny position here. I might be replaced pretty soon by one of them.
Yeah, next week we're going to have your children on, and it'll still be the case.
No!
Yeah, Abby's pretty smart. I saw that big bag of books she was reading.
Yeah, we could. Yeah, that might be the end of my role at Carnivore Theology when my daughter owns me.
Later, suckers!
Hey! Dunk, dunk, dunk,
dunk. That'll also make sense in post-production.
Okay.
I'm going to leave a mark.